Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. We have a very special guest for you today. I was in Knoxville, and I heard this voice behind me, and I said, oh my God, it's Dr. Larry Pilesky. I cannot believe I'm going to get to meet this man. You are somebody I've wanted to meet for a long, long time, and I'm thrilled to have you on the Solari Report. I'm going to call you Larry, if that's okay. A wonderful pediatrician from New York, sterling credentials and record, but no more fierce, coherent, intelligent, brilliant, funny, interesting person who's been fighting to make science heard when it comes to the health of our children. And it's always, you know, wonderful in a world where children truly are being poisoned to hear that kind of strong voice. So, Larry, welcome to the Solari Report, and thank you for everything you've been doing.
Oh, thank you, Catherine, for inviting me. I was actually really pleased to meet you in Knoxville because I've seen your work for a while now, and I'm glad we had this opportunity to get to speak, and I'm excited about our time together on the show. Yeah, it's been over 20 years, maybe 24 years since I started to move in a direction different from the direction that I was trained in. I mean, I went to NYU School of Medicine, started in 1983. I can't believe I'm coming up on 40 years that I entered medical school. It's so crazy. And graduated in 1987 and did a pediatric residency for 3 years at Mount Sinai in New York. I had an amazing education. The pediatricians who trained us in New York had been practicing since the 1940s. Right. And the brilliance about their skills was that they were practicing before there were medicines, before there were machines, before there were tests. And so they had what's called, six senses of practice. They could smell, taste, hear, see, you know, everything, and could make diagnoses so quickly. And we had that drummed into our heads as medical students and residents: take good histories, take good physicals, do a differential diagnosis, and listen to the mother. Always listen to the mother. And most of our diagnoses could be made just by doing a good history and physical. Few tests.
Wow, that's wonderful.
What I noticed, you know, as the 90s went, and I was an ER physician and I was running a pediatric intensive care unit teaching residents and medical students, that the history and physical were starting to shrink and the tests were starting to increase. And so a five-year-old would come into the ER and the MRI would show after having a headache. And I'd like, wait a second, hold on. Tell me what the kid eat. Did the kid have trauma? Did the kid, is there something sociological going on? Divorce, new marriage, death, starting school, new birth of a sibling. I mean, what's going on? What's going on at home? Diet, all of it. And the residents and medical students wouldn't know any of the answers. They would just tell me the answer to the MRI. And this was mid-90s, 95 to 97. And I was actually yelled at for harassing the medical students because I wanted them to do a good history and physical. And I was being told to leave them alone and stop harassing them and just let them do what they were doing and just make sure the patients are all taken care of. And I was like, what is going on here? But it was really in 1998, around 97, 98, where a mother came up to me and said, Dr. Larry, did you know there's mercury in vaccines? And I said, no. And so instead of saying, it's minor, don't worry about it, I just said, why? And I remember starting medical school in 83 and 84, and we do journal clubs, and they would teach us to take an article and tear it apart limb from limb, go through the abstract, go through the methodology, go through the results, go through the conclusions, go through the discussion, and really pinpoint where things were done improperly and be willing to critically think through it. And then as the years went on into the 90s and the 2000s and up to today, we are barely encouraged to critically do anything, let alone think. And I never stopped. I never stopped because I realized that it was my job to stick to what is true. And so I don't fight anything. I don't go against anything. I go towards what I know is the truth. And if anybody wants to argue with me about it, that's okay. I'm not interested in fighting, but I am interested in having a discussion. And that's the other thing that we've lost over the almost 40 years.
I saw you giving testimony, and I think it was, I don't know if it was in New York or Connecticut, but you were giving testimony, I think, to a local or state body. And what was amazing was you weren't fighting them, but you were educating them, and your command of the science was so excellent that they were really struggling to disagree with you because you had science on your side and they didn't. And it was remarkable to watch. I don't know if you know which video I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was February 19th of 2020. I was at the Connecticut State Public Health Committee hearing about the removal of the religious exemption in Connecticut. I had already met with the Public Health Committee in November of 2019 and appeared on a panel discussion. So they had already heard me previously. So the chairman of the department was, you know, ready, so to speak. And I was not ready. I did not expect him to come at me the way he did. And something switched inside of me as soon as I saw what he was doing. And I had this realization, oh, I know what he's up to. And so I learned very quickly in the years, you know, last 10 years, how to actually welcome someone who disagrees with you instead of fighting them. I actually welcomed him in and I acknowledged him and I appreciated what he had to say and I understood what he had to say. And then I shared my experience of the science, which was different from what he said. And I went through it in detail that he could not come back to me on because he's not a doctor, he's not a scientist. And he tried to do that a couple of times. And each time he mumbled and fumbled over himself because he didn't know what he was talking about. And I realized somebody had prompted him, or that he read some, you know, title of some story in some article and thought he would utilize it. And the thing is that I wasn't trying to make him look foolish. But I was trying to explain so that people would understand it. And what came back to me from that episode was that how could anyone still remove the religious exemption after hearing what I said? And that's when we all realized that it was rigged, that the decision was already done before anyone actually sat in there to give their testimony. Right.
So one of the things, one of the ways that I have watched and followed your work is you do a show on a video show with a favorite of ours, Dr. Tenpenny, and it's called Critical Thinking with Dr. Tenpenny, with Dr. T and Dr. P. And then there are a couple of other doctors who regularly join you. You know, it sort of cycles around. You get as many as five. So, have you ever had six? I think it's...
No.
It's Dr. Merritt and Dr. Northrup and Dr. Carrie Medej.
Yeah. Matt.
And so, but it's a wonderful conversation and it's very hopeful. It's very uplifting and it's fun. It's like dropping into a dinner party of people who are having a great time with great discussion and trying to figure out what the truth is. So it's like you're treasure hunters on the hunt for the truth, but you're having fun and enjoying each other's company. And it's, so tell us about how that show came to be.
I'd love to. Thanks. I've known Dr. Tenpenny for over 20 years. I think 2000 is when we met. And over the years, we've come in and out of each other's lives, you know, intersecting in certain conferences. In the last couple of years, we were more in touch. And even before COVID started, we were talking about doing something together. And then once COVID began, we really hit the road running. And in July 2020, we started Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P. And we'd meet once a week. And what we initially did was we'd go over current events, what was going on in the literature, what was being said. And we'd banter back and forth. We'd read the chats and include what people were saying. We'd answer questions. And we were having a lot of fun and, you know, we were getting comfortable with each other. And then in April of 2021, we brought the five docs together, Dr. Northrup, Dr. Merritt, Dr. Madde, Dr. T and me. And that was on the heels of the beginning of the problems with the menstrual cycles that women were experiencing in response to exposure to those who had gotten the shot. And it just took off. I mean, we had such a great chemistry amongst the five of us that we just said, let's do once a month. And so we've been doing once a month since April of 2021. And, you know, each person brings what it is in the world that they're working on, what they want to talk about. And we just cross-pollinate. We have opinions. We like to keep it light because we like each other a lot. We respect each other a lot, and we want to give people, I mean, it's a little entertainment, and it's a little science, and it's a lot social, and we give people hope and inspiration.
But you're always bringing it down to what's really going to help people and the practical problems that people are coming. You can see there's this tremendous flow of people, you know, of patients and other people coming to you with their problems, whether it's because of what's happening to their health right now as a result of all these things, or you know, the related stresses and the related politics. So,
well, the one thing that COVID has brought is a one size fits all magnified narrative, that gave people only one understanding of the world. And, you know, many people were searching for other perspectives. And that's what we try to bring. We try to introduce an understanding of things that might help people see the issues from a different perspective, one that empowers them, one that educates them, one that inspires them and gives them a chance to do their own research on top of what it is that they're hearing from us. I mean, I've gotten very concerned in my career as a physician and just as a man living in society, when people become experts at something without having any experience, without any research, without any trial and error, without any toil, without any of their own guts and blood and interest in doing the work to figure it out. And all they just do is hear what an expert on the TV or in some media outlet says, and now all of a sudden they're an expert. And it's very disconcerting because you can't have a conversation with those people because you'll reveal that they live in a house of cards.
Right.
And we've had so much of that, and people are so in need of some outside source to give them their answers to the world. And what COVID, I think, is showing us and what we're trying to do is offer people the opportunity to go in and toil, you know, work it out, think it through. Right. What does your intuition say? What, how does it feel to hear this? Do more research, figure it out.
Right. So I want to talk to you about, you call it transmission. Some people call it shedding, but I think transmission is a much better word. And that's what Dr. Tenpenny, you said, uses. I constantly, from subscribers in our audience, get tremendous amounts of feedback that transmission is a very real phenomena, and they're trying to figure out how to deal with it. And I would love, you know, the challenge is most of the information we have on this, as far as I know, is anecdotal. So the people who seem to have the best understanding are people who are practicing medicine every day and are, you know, working with patients, dealing with it. So What do we know about transmission? What can you tell us about what it is and what's happening?
Okay, so let's go to the regular vaccines. In the regular vaccine schedule, there is some understanding that some of the material that's injected into children or adults can be shed or transmitted to other people.
Right.
So it should not come as a surprise that this injection is capable of doing the same. And when we first started learning about this injection, we started stumbling on all of these articles about the manufacturers producing self-spreading vaccines.
Right.
And so it made sense that people were getting sick from being around others who had gotten the shot, but we had no literature because no study had been done to test what happens when people are around others who've gotten the shot, even though the initial trial with Pfizer actually warns pregnant women not to go near anybody who got the shot in the trial, and warned people not to have sexual intercourse for over at least a month if you got the shot in the trial, for fear of what? I mean, like, right. What did they know in the trial about the transmission? So when we started hearing the stories, it all fell on deaf ears. Because what transmission? Nothing's happening.
Right.
And yet on the ground, we were getting thousands and thousands and thousands of stories from women who are in menopause who are now bleeding, from women who had regular cycles who are now having multiple cycles more than every 28 to 30 days. We were getting women who had normal bleeding to women who are getting clots and major
bleeding.
And this bleeding
is women who are unvaccinated but who are around people who are vaccinated?
So you're right. I mean, this was the reports from women predominantly initially who were uninjected, because again, I don't believe this is a vaccine.
I agree.
So they were uninoculated and around those who had been inoculated. And the stories started really, really pumping out in April of 2021. And then you started seeing people who were getting heart attacks and strokes who were not given the shot, who were exposed to those who had gotten the shot. You saw women who were getting miscarriages. You saw people dying who were exposed to those who'd gotten the shot. And so all of the classic symptoms of what we considered COVID were happening in people who had not gotten the shot, who were exposed to those who had. And so it made us go back and again into the literature and say, there's so much information in the literature about manufacturers wanting to manufacture self-spreading vaccines for the purposes of depopulation.
Right.
And that, you know, when you start reading the World Economic Forum and, you know, all that's come out from these unfortunate websites and speakers, you say to yourself, well, now we're putting the pieces together, that they're actually enacting their hopes of creating self-spreading injections so that we can vaccinate, whatever that means, people who refuse to get the shot and potentially harm them as well.
Is there any indication if somebody is experiencing symptoms of transmission, what they can do? Are there actions people can take to protect themselves?
Well, the challenge is that because of the EUA, the emergency use authorization, we don't have a full list of all the ingredients.
Right.
And we are suspicious that there are some unfortunate ingredients in these injections that are intentionally put in for harm. So when you start hearing about the hydrogel and the nanoparticles and the graphene oxide and possibly parasites and then circuitry, and then you say, what else? No one has done proper research on the contents. You've had investigators around the world who are basically illegally evaluating these shots, but you don't have any leader, any elected or selected leader actually saying, you know, we really need to look at the contents of these shots.
Right.
So from the very top, we're not getting a sense of what is really in them.
Right. Well, we do know the Japanese threw Moderna out because there were stainless steel particles.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And then some.
Right.
Right. We just don't know. So we do have a sense that there is an energy that's transmitted, that there's an energy response to electromagnetic pulsing that can ignite someone's symptoms. So one of the recommendations, which is a little bit difficult in our world, is to, you know, turn off Wi-Fi.
Right.
Create distance between you and your devices. Don't keep the devices near your bed when you're sleeping. Evaluate your home for electromagnetic pulsing and dirty electricity. There are some companies that are manufacturing products that don't limit the exposure to the electromagnetic pulsing, but they mitigate the asynchronous or damaging effects of some of that exposure.
Right.
So that's a big thing, because there does seem to be some electromagnetic instigation of symptoms. You know, and then, you know, you wonder if the supplements that were used to help people who had COVID might help those who get sick from being exposed through transmission.
Right.
So there's, you know, vitamin DK with magnesium, there's the zinc with copper, there's the quercetin, there's the glutathione, there's molecular hydrogen, there's high dose vitamin C. There's, you know, the baths, some there's ozone therapy, there's hyperbaric therapy. Some people use chlorine dioxide. There's anti-parasitic medicines, which again, makes you suspicious. Why would an anti-parasitic medicine help you get better?
Right.
Like hydroxychloroquine, right. Ivermectin. Then there are others like fenbendazole and Alinea, which are, again, part of the routine of doing anti-parasitics.
So for 11 years I litigated with the Department of Justice, and it got sort of very fractious, and I was poisoned on multiple occasions, and I had to go through a 5-year period of very serious detox. And I learned a lot about not only detox, but how America was being poisoned, and especially heavy metals poisoning. And some of the things I used, I had a dear friend whose mother took 2 Pfizer shots and got very ill. And so she tried some of the methods, some of the detox methods, and they seemed to help enormously. Now, I didn't know if that was just, you know, you're detoxing generally, and so that makes your body stronger and that helps, or if these materials really can be detoxed. I don't know.
Well, again, you know, congratulations to that woman who succeeded. Not everybody is succeeding in utilizing those methods. One of the things that we've talked about on Critically Thinking, and others have said on their platforms, is that this is a spiritual war.
Right.
And by nature, if it's a spiritual war and you either took the shot or were exposed to someone who got the shot by choice, then you know, there needs to be some kind of atonement or repentance for allowing yourself to be injected with something that was experimental.
Right.
That was never tested for safety, that gives the manufacturers full immunity to any liability, and that has never been proven to actually protect anything or anyone from an infectious illness.
Right.
So it was this, you know, carte blanche trust. And I mean, I call it false idol worship of the authorities, because you just so desperately wanted your life back that you would submit to something that had not been tested.
Right.
And you didn't do any work on to understand what it was that you were doing to yourself, or what it was you were doing to others, or what it was you were exposing yourself to. And, you know, that's a key piece to healing, is, you know, on the spirit level, to create some level of forgiveness and compassion for yourself and others in what stands to be one of the most heinous crimes in human history.
I knew that the injections were going to be very bad. And I had warned everyone at Solaria, everybody would listen, to not, you know, to not participate and to protect their family. And we spent a great deal of time doing forms. The first one was a family financial disclosure form to help people in a family talk other people in the family out of taking them. And if they couldn't talk them out of taking them, talk them into providing the life and disability and health and other insurance that would protect, you know, so that a vaccine injury or death didn't turn into a family bankruptcy as well. So, so we did a whole series of forms, family financial disclosure form, employer disclosure form, you know, to try and stop employers. And sometimes it would really work. And school disclosure forms. Anyway, so we did a lot on that. But I wasn't sure, you know, I thought there were multiple goals, but it wasn't clear to me that genocide or sort of a culling of the population wasn't a goal until I saw the Skidmore survey. I don't know if you saw are you familiar with Dr. Mark Skidmore's work?
No, I'm not.
He did a survey, and it was a very detailed survey. It came to the Doctors for COVID Ethics, and he said, you know, what economists do when there's a wide gap between what you're experiencing in the field versus what the government is saying is you just do a survey. And you survey their professional survey firms, and you use them, and you go out, and you ask people lots of questions, and you get a sampling that is representative of the population, and it's a very good way of testing what's really going on. So he did a very detailed survey about people's experience with COVID and the injections, and to test it and polish the survey before he gave it to a professional survey firm, he put it out on the Salieri Network and the Health Freedom Network. And it was remarkable because we had so many people respond. You could see people really wanted to tell their story. I think in 24 hours, we had a couple thousand responses. And this was a survey that took 15 to 20 minutes at least to fill out. It was long and complicated. Next to the last questions, in the sort of last batch of questions, was, have you taken the injection? Yes or no? Do you know anybody who's taken the injection? Do you know anybody who's been harmed by the injection? If so, of those, you know, how many people is that? If so, take the person you know the best and describe in one sentence what happened. And then the software racks up, you know, sort of thousands of those one sentences. And when you read through this, it's in something called Appendix C in the survey, you realize, oh my God, this is a genocide. Mm-hmm. This is a genocide because it's thousands and thousands of, you know, myocarditis, fast-acting cancer, you know, on and on and on, heart attack, blah, 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 blah. And there's so many. It was such a high number of people who knew someone who had been injured or died. And that was the first time I looked at it and I said, okay, you know, one of the goals here is, and I think it's complex, not just a culling of the population, but also a, you know, you're seeing things that lower fertility and birth rates. You know, there's something definitely going on, you know, not just with death, but with birth as well. And I have to tell you that, you know, we have subscribers all over the world and audience over the world, as do you. And the feedback, the variability of experience with death and disease varies tremendously place to place. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a uniform experience whatsoever. And the only thing I've ever seen that would explain this, and I'm not saying that makes it true, is someone put in a proposal at one point to the one of the big climate change conferences, proposing that every place in the world, every country, and I would say take it down to the state level, every state got a quota of how many they had to cull, and it was enforced with credit. It was to be enforced with credit and trade embargoes organized through the UN. And it described a quota system and was very... you know, the way you could run it now with AI and software, you can do it on an individualized basis, which I believe is what's happening.
Wow. Wow.
Right. So, you know,
I actually believed that it was genocide back in 2020. When I saw, first of all, I knew from the very beginning that this was not a viral illness.
Right.
It was very clear to me from a scientific perspective. And from a medical perspective, having run an intensive care unit and worked in an ER, when I was seeing the symptoms that people were having, it was clear to me that this was evidence of a poisoning,
right,
of unknown etiology,
right,
rather than a virus.
Right.
Then I saw that when doctors around the world were utilizing in interventions that were nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals, and things like ozone or hyperbarics or nebulizers, and they were single-handedly removed from reporting any of their successes, and all of those interventions were wiped out, I knew that there was an agenda here.
Right.
Because if any doctor could prove any success utilizing any intervention, then the EUA for the injection could not stand.
Right.
And so when I saw an across the board wiping of any stories, any experiences, any information, any proof. And you know, Pierre Corey has gone through, and
right.
and Paul has gone through, and doctors in Italy and all over the world were just wiped out from any producing any evidence about their experience. I knew that the agenda was to make sure that everybody got this injection. And I knew, having been studying, you know, the subject of injections for over 20 years, it takes 5, 10, 12, 15 years to truly understand the nature of an injection,
right,
as to whether or not it is effective in reducing any kind of infection. So here you were introducing a technology, a so-called technology, that had never been used in the history of vaccines and had no precedence whatsoever as to whether or not it provided protection or reduction of incidence of disease ever.
Right.
So, and they were pushing it as if it was going to be successful, even though their statements were, we don't know if it'll protect you against disease. We don't know if it'll give you antibody against disease. We don't know if it'll stop transmission of the disease. We don't know if it'll reduce deaths, hospitalizations, or serious injury. And we never tested for most of it, but we're going to make you get it anyway. So again, all of these inconsistencies made me understand that there was a corruption way at the top that was not intended to have anything to do with health. And therefore, it had to do with genocide. And in October or November of 2020, I was on a Zoom cast with Vaccine Choice in Canada. And they asked me, do you have an opinion about the injection? And I said, do you want the short answer or the long answer? And they said, well, give us the short answer. And I said, it's a murder weapon.
Right.
Because it was clear, the science we were getting
right.
was clear from the start, that the ingredients were never tested for safety. The ingredients that we did know were in there were lethal.
Right.
And so it said to me, I've seen this playbook before.
Right.
And this is very familiar to me. It's not unbelievable to me. I can fathom what's going on. It's very clear. They're being very clear. The government is being very clear. The media is being very clear. Scientific community is being very clear. And the medical community is being very clear. We're not doing science. We're not doing medicine. We're being tyrannical. We're coercing. And we have an agenda. And it just became very clear.
So I assumed that there was a desire to literally, in the transhumanism goal, get an operating system in our body, which I do think is one of the goals. And that part of this was a giant experiment. You just try lots of things, see what works, see who can tolerate it, and you go from there. So I thought the number one goal was to get an operating system in our body and to essentially establish genetic control. So the babies that come in the world can't come in naturally. You know, they have to come in with approved. You know, so Mr. Global gets to control the genes that come into the world. So I just thought it was genetic control, operating system, as opposed to genocide. And now with the experience we've had, I think, you know, they always stack functions. It's never one thing.
Correct.
But it's clearly both. So
yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, even in Moderna's literature, it talked right. about it as an operating system.
Right.
And again, you know, the tragedy for me is that the medical profession, because of its desperation and its, you know, mass think, could not step back and say, wait a second, this technology has never been used before. How do we know it's going to protect us? Why are we calling it a vaccine? Have we tested whether it fits any of the criteria of a vaccine? Have we ever proven that this can stop an infection from happening? Have we ever molecularly looked at
right.
what happens when these materials are injected? You know, if an antibody is produced against what we think is the virus, does the antibody actually attack any other part of the body in molecular mimicry the way, autoimmune disease occurs? Is that something we need to look out for? And the tragedy, Catherine, is that Pfizer and Moderna gave the FDA in the fall of 2020, a full list of all the serious side effects that they saw in the trials.
Right. Right.
And the FDA just took it and put it right under the table. And then so in 2021, when we started seeing all these things, and the FDA and Pfizer and Moderna said, no, we don't know about this. And so it was corruption way, way, way at the top. And how do you introduce that concept to a population that needs to trust an organized system that is actually not to be trusted? And that's been the goal.
So what I've watched for many years is more and more of the population falling into literally a trance where they're resonating not with life and the people around them and the activities around them and the animals around them. They're resonating with the machine. You know, and we're all subject to this because I spend way, way too much time on a computer, you know, or on a phone for the work that I do. But, I've watched this, and we're watching a population that is because it's more than believing what they get through their phone or what they get through their TV or they get through the internet. It's that they resonate with literally the people and the energy that's coming through it, even when what they're believing defies the reality that they see when they walk around every day. And so you have this schism in the population between those who are resonating with real life and those who are resonating with the machine.
Right.
And I just had, this is the question that I wanted to ask you about, because I've spent a lot of time trying to study this. Why do people literally disappear into the machine? And why do they believe the machine, you know, despite the fact that the machine is perpetually lied to them? So I was watching, a friend of mine had a child who was very much, you know, addicted to social media, addicted to the phone, addicted online. And they asked the child, or they arranged for the child to go spend literally 3 months outdoors with no phone, no social media, no whatever. And if you look at a picture of that child before and after, the difference in their whole electromagnetic presence and field is so phenomenal, it literally took my breath away. Because in one person, you see someone who's alive and has, you know, unbelievably strong personal energy and is connected to everything around them. The other person is very weak and literally kind of falling into the, you know, there's no connection between them and the life around them. And they're very weak and easily pushed around. Totally different. You know, it's the same exact physical person, but if you look at their electromagnetic presence, you can't even believe it's the same person. Very
sure.
Shocking.
Well, you know, in when you understand brain development, you know that the first part of brain development in an infant is geared towards addictions, habits, and immediate gratification.
Right. Right.
That part of the brain is supposed to lessen in intensity as we get older. And so that hindbrain is not meant to stay in immediate gratification, addiction, and habit and thrill, because we need to move towards, you know, the forebrain, which is the part of the brain that allows you to think and reason and rationalize,
right.
analyze, and all that. And, you know, there are people who have gone rogue from Silicon Valley who have actually reported that the purpose of the cell phone, the purpose of the apps, is to keep you addicted. It's to seduce you into needing that stimulation because you can't figure out what you need. And so it has stripped brain development and kept the lower brain centers dominant and active, so that you don't need to do anything in life because all of your answers are coming from the apps and from the computer and from, you know, the iPads and from the games, because you don't need life anymore. Everything you need is in here. And that's by design, because ultimately what happens to the part of the brain that's responsible for you to critically think is shut down. because you cannot critically think and be addicted at the same time.
Right.
If you're trying to run out of a burning building, which is your fight or flight response, while reading Plato, you just can't do it. And right. So it's brilliant because they understand brain development. They understand that you only come to true knowledge and understanding if you get out of your hindbrain, out of your fight or flight, out of your thrill, addiction, and habit, and you go into life with curiosity and create experiences for yourself and toil and try and observe and discover and go back and redo it and research. Because after doing all those things and getting away from the addictions, you actually start to realize that you can figure things out.
Right.
But if you are in the, if you're in the addiction, there's no opportunity to figure things out. So you have to rely on everything from the outside to tell you who you are, what to believe, and what is true. And so I've seen that of what you describe many times in children. You know, there are people for over 20 years who've described ADD as NDD, which is nature deficit disorder. And we have removed our kids and ourselves from what is in our best interest and reverted to what we want. And that's a primitive response. Just is.
So I describe what is happening right now as the general population has been herded into a digital surveillance corral. And it's like a corral that has three sides to the corral. And the fourth side has not snapped in yet. And the fourth side is a combination, whether you want to call it a digital ID and vaccine passports, et cetera, and CBDC, central bank digital currency. And if those two things snap into place, then you move out of anything we've ever known into something which I would describe as slavery. Mm-hmm. You know, I liken it to a digital concentration camp. Your car, your house, your community literally become digital concentration camps, and you have complete control. And when that complete control is possible, the things that will go on are beyond many people in the Western world to contemplate, you know, that that could happen.
Right.
That people will get that kind of digital control. They'll come take your children. You know, they're going to do all sorts of very shocking things, including more genocide. Mm-hmm. And so you can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. And there is a way to stop it, in my opinion, and that's if enough people stampede out. Right. In other words, the four walls aren't on. We have the ability to leave. So, for example, one of the things we promote is use cash. And it's phenomenal because cash usage is really, from all of our feedback, all of our indication, it's really increasing dramatically because a lot of people smell that they don't want to be locked down in this way. But it has been a real challenge to persuade each individual that what they do is important.
Right.
In other words, if one person doesn't comply, if one person decides to get out of the big banks, if one person decides not to take the shot, if one person decides not to finance these guys, if one person turns off the TV and doesn't listen to it, you know, what I keep hearing is I'm only one person, it doesn't matter what I do. Mm. And so the question is, how do you counter that? How do you inspire people to understand they are one person and what one person can do makes a huge difference? You know, if I do, it's the 100 monkey syndrome.
Right.
So, and particularly in a highly leveraged financial system, what one person does is very, very important.
Sure. Well,
how do you do it? I mean, you're dealing with patients every day. How do you persuade them?
Well, the thing is that, you know, as a physician and as being given pretty big positions as an ER physician, running an intensive care unit, being in private practice, people give me a lot of authority. And I took it as a medical doctor and I ran with it. So I told people what to do and I persuaded people. And what I realized over the years is that wasn't a healthy way to build a relationship on any level.
Right. Right.
So, you know, I was realizing that I was part of a tyrannical hierarchy as a medical doctor. And so as I started practicing more holistically, and as I started doing my own inner work, I realized that I had more influence by stepping out of that paradigm than if I stayed in it. And what I mean by that is the old paradigm is, I'm a doctor, do what I'm telling you. You as the patient have no responsibility or accountability. And you essentially listen to me and you're at your own mercy because you're just, you have no power there. Then as a doctor, I say to you, don't do that. That's the other side of the same coin. You, again, you're, it's tyrannical hierarchy. You don't have any say in what you're doing. You don't even know why you're doing it. You're just listening because I said so. And there's more tyranny. So the way that I've been practicing for years now, as best as possible, because I'm human, so I slip into the old because of my passion, and that is that this is my experience. This is what I know. And I'm going to share my experience with you. I'm going to tell you what I've seen, what I've done, what I've researched, what I've heard, what I know. And what I found is that when I do that and educate, I empower people. I offer them a possibility other than these two sides.
Right.
And I inspire them to become learned about something that I became learned about. And I'm just sharing with you. And because I have found, and especially in just doing pediatrics with looking at children, children don't listen to what you tell them. I mean, the number one complaint in parents is that my child doesn't listen. And I said, because they're not supposed to. That's not how children learn. They learn by modeling. They learn by imitating. They learn by observing. They learn by mimicking. They learn by trying what you do. And so if you want them to learn something, do it.
Just do it.
Right.
Right.
And so what I began to realize is that I had more impact if I created my personal story, because I started opening my heart to share my own experience. And what I realized is that people won't change unless they have an experience of their own, or they're interested in someone else's experience. They trust it. They're interested. They're curious. And they're willing to see if what someone else's experience could do to impact their lives. And so I just found a way to step out of the tyranny into relationship language, into shared experiences. And I found that people were more engaged and more curious and interested than if I stepped up here and said, do this or don't do that. And people have to be curious. If they're not curious, they're not going to want to see things differently than the ways they see things.
Now, did you find that doing that would bring people out of fear, that you could get people who had been put in a state of fear by the propaganda?
Yes.
And you could move them out of fear into believing that they could, not only they could go another route, but they could succeed going another route.
Right. I mean, in child development and brain development, the way to get out of that fight or flight response, that fear, panic, anxiety, is to create curiosity and the sense that the unknown and the uncertainty is not so dreadful. Because if you watch the way children develop, they get out of that hindbrain, that fight or flight response, by exploring. And they're free to do it. It's a natural emanation of their development. So I started to show people ways to be curious, and I'd ask them questions. I did a lot of asking of questions, but I also said to them at the end, listen, ultimately, you are free to make every decision that's right for you.
Right.
I know that after we're done in our conversation, you can't say you didn't hear what it is that I've shared. You can deny it. You can tell me I'm an idiot. You can tell me I'm full of it. You can tell me I'm a conspiracy theorist, but you can't say that you never heard it. And so I went from the confrontational tyranny to the, let's have a talk. Let me share my experience with you. Let me share you what I've learned. Let me ask questions. Let me see what you think you know about this. in a non-threatening way. And more often than not, people were willing to lean in and to hear it. Not all the time, because my job is not to convince you. My job is right. to offer you the opportunity to be curious.
Okay, so let's go from 2021 to today. You know, in 2021, there was a, you know, there was a wave of the propaganda. I don't know if you've ever, there used to be a children's show, a friend of mine in Australia told me about it, about these bears who would take the magic potion and then they could travel all over. And, you know, and so there was this sense of, you know, this is a magic potion. And once we take it, everything will be wonderful and we can travel everywhere and we'll be free. You know, it's a ticket to freedom. And so you had this sort of magical thinking. Now that many people have been killed, many people have been injured, you know, and there's clearly a very different experience that is reverberating back through the population. So now do you find that there are many, many more people who are persuaded by the facts?
You know, I think if they are persuaded by the facts, it's because it's their facts. It's not because they read it somewhere. It's because they Right. experienced it, or someone close to them experienced it, or they had their own aha moment. But it's not because it came from the outside. And that, Right. again, brain development, you know, forebrain, the understanding of the world, ownership of information doesn't come because somebody tells it to you. And so we have had to bear the long process of watching people suffer in order to come to their own conclusion about what they participated in and what their experience was for them to what we ultimately call waking up. I think more people are waking up, but I also think that the powers that are trying to implement these policies are showing their hands more and more.
Right.
So they're more transparent than ever. And so how could you not see it?
So I agree with everything you're saying. How do you get someone who's never experienced slavery and can't even fathom it to appreciate that they're in danger of falling into it?
Because you share that you're afraid that you're in danger of falling into it. Again, if you want to wake someone up, if you want to convince somebody, I Right. find that as an optimal way of igniting somebody's curiosity. I would share that, you know, I just need to let you know that I'm concerned that we're in danger. And if they look at me and say, oh, you're one of those conspiracy theorists, I would say, yeah, okay. I don't feel that way about it. So I just want you to know that I'm still concerned whether you call me a conspiracy theorist or not. And this is what I did in the Connecticut State Public Health Committee,
right.
is to actually right. be able to affirm my experience as valid without saying, you must now believe me because right. I said it. No, you don't need to believe me. I just want you to understand where I'm coming from.
Right. And it was very effective. It was unbelievably effective. Okay, well, this has been a marvelous conversation. I want to encourage everyone to check out Critical Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P if they haven't seen it yet. So tell us how we find it. Tell us how we find your website and find you.
Okay, thank you for that. My website is drpalevsky, P-A-L-E-V-S-K-Y.com. On the website, you will see many of the newsletters that I've put out with many of the videos that I've done. And on the newsletter, you will also see the Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P that are archived. You can also see me on Telegram, Dr. Palevsky. You can see me on Instagram, dr.palevsky. You will also find me on Rumble and Odyssey and MeWe and Facebook. I guess a lot of others.
But see what one person can do?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, and you're still practicing. You're practicing in Long Island, correct?
I am.
Yeah.
And having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I love the kids. I love the parents. And, you know, it's where I get all of my healing and it's where I get all of my information to share with the world because, uh-huh. you know, I see the way children develop and that helps me to convey information to other people.
Polly Tommy once said, she said, you know, the thing that really worked in Vax 2 was when all the unvaccinated showed up and we were able to show how beautiful and healthy and happy these children were. And when people saw that, that was just miraculous in the impact.
Sure.
And that's what worked.
Well, I mean, I have many, many families with whom I work where the parents have made the choice not to give their children the shots. And I have some families where they chose full shots to some kids, partial shots to other kids, and no shots to other kids.
Right.
Every one of the families reports that when their children are out in public, people always remark about how advanced these kids are. And of course, I have to say to the parents with love and affection, please don't take this the wrong way, but your kids are not advanced. They are actually what we expect them to be and what I was taught they would be almost 40 years ago.
Right.
It's just that the bar has been so lowered for what we're allowing to be okay with these developmentally disabled children, that these children look like they're advanced, but they're actually
normal developing.
And so clear. I mean, Paul Thomas has done it in his studies. I've seen it in over 20 years of practice. And you can't take away my experience and what I've seen. You can try and tell me that what I'm seeing is incorrect, but how do you have an understanding of what I see through my eyes? I've seen it, and parents have seen it, and COVID has definitely raised the suspicion with parents about all childhood injections.
Children who have not been poisoned look healthier than children who have.
And parents know it.
It's right.
Parents know it. And that's really where the change occurs, Catherine. It's in the parental experiences, and then their neighbors seeing it, and then their family members seeing it, and then their co-workers seeing it, and then the strangers they meet in the park seeing it, and then the schools seeing it. So, you know, it's going to propagate more and more because more parents are getting it. But they're not getting it because somebody's necessarily telling them. They're getting it because they're having the experience. I mean, if you look at, you talk to Polly, she'll tell you she didn't know what she was up against.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she learned only because she experienced.
And right.
There are so many kids who have tragically suffered either permanent damage or death because the parents experienced it. The tragedy is not every parent realized that their kid was permanently damaged or killed by the shots. So, you know, that's another level of education that's still waiting to happen. I see a time when there are enough angry moms that, you know, pediatrics is going to change forever, where, you know, the pediatricians just cannot continue to pass on these childhood shots the way they have been, and that parents are really going to learn what profits pediatricians get by selling these shots, and how their bonuses are tied to percentages of vaccinated kids in their practices. And so that's why parents are kicked out of practices, because insurance companies are holding the pediatricians hostage to their bonuses at the end of the year. And people are not aware of that as a financial stake. So it's all coming out. And, you know, at what degree, at what level, at what timing, again, it has to come out because we share our experiences, not because we tell you what to do. Any parent knows that they just fail every time they tell a kid what to do.
So, Dr. Larry, it's been a pleasure having you on the Salieri Report. Thank you for everything you do. Say hello to Dr. Tenpenny for us and your great colleagues. If there's ever anything we can do to support your work, we would love the opportunity to do it. We think you're wonderful. We think you're doing great things. And I have to say again, Thanksgiving is coming and we're giving thanks for you.
Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate this opportunity. And I look forward to more of our conversations in the future.
We're in cahoots.
Good.